You cannot begin to understand the rise and rise of Trump unless you go all the way back and understand his chief strategist and now White House advisor, Steve Bannon. And while we've discussed it, a great Bannon very frequently on the program, we are now have access to the most amazing material. Thanks to Devil's Bargain, Steve Bannon, Donald Trump and the Storming of the Presidency, written by Joshua Green. Joshua is the chief economic correspondent for Bloomberg News, and his book details the bargain, if you like, the Mephistophelian contract made between the two, both rich, both brash, opinionated, volcanic, both harbouring grievances and both alpha males. And he uncovers an unlikely alliance which coalesced into a political worldview of sorts and speculates where that alliance might go now. And given that there were some signs that Trump wanted to tear up the aforementioned Mephistophelian contract a while ago, it's the most fascinating glimpse into a paranoid and volatile world. And Joshua joins me on our little wireless program from his home in the US. Welcome, Joshua.
Thanks so much for having me.
What sets you apart, I think, is that you met Bannon quite a long time ago, before you wrote about him. Out of all things, a screening of that doco he made about Sarah Palin. First impressions, if you please.
Well, I met him back in 2011. I'd written a long article about Palin, who most people in Washington thought was going to run for president in 2012. And in the U.S., Sarah Palin in 2012 had the same kind of crazed outsider appeal to the media that Donald Trump had in 2016. And Bannon called me up and said, I've done this documentary film on Palin. I read your article. Please come to a screening. And I went and met him the next day. And I thought his movie, frankly, was not very good, but Bannon himself was this wildly charismatic, slightly crazed-seeming person who had the same nationalist, anti-immigrant politics that you hear from Trump today. And my first impression of Bannon was that he was a grifter, that he was a con man who was trying to make a quick buck off a brand of politics that was then known as the Tea Party movement in the U.S., this right-wing populism. But I enjoyed him as a character, and I got to know him and hung out with him for the next 5 or 6 years, eventually wrote a big magazine profile of him.
But you also make a very significant point that in some ways he cut across traditional left-right lines.
That's right. I mean, in Washington, the two political parties and their representatives are very homogenous. They tend to come out of the same institutions. They tend to have the same worldviews and politics. And Bannon had a very distinct third way type of Republican politics that was more economically populist and virulently anti-immigrant. I think you saw that in the leaked phone call, the leaked transcripts with President Trump and Prime Minister Turnbull. That is pure Steve Bannon, and that was a set of beliefs that you didn't really see represented in Washington back in 2011 and 2012.
Yes, there was Karl Rove trying to make George W. into the compassionate conservative. None of that sort of soppy nonsense for Bannon. Okay, we know how you met Bannon. How did he meet Trump?
Well, so back around the time I met Bannon in 2011, Bannon was brought up to Trump Tower by a veteran Republican activist down here named David Bossie, who was most famous for having tormented Bill and Hillary Clinton for about 20, 25 years. This is what Bossie did professionally. And Trump had met him, and he'd begun to think seriously about running for president, although none of us in the media recognized that he was serious at the time. And one day, he brings up Bannon, and by all accounts, Bannon and Trump clicked. They just connected, because Bannon, despite his differences with Trump, there are a lot of similarities in their backgrounds. They both went to military high schools. They were both deal makers, businessmen, and they were both interested in the entertainment industry. Trump, with his television show as The Apprentice, Bannon had been a Hollywood film producer who had then moved into making these right-wing documentaries. So as one advisor put it to me at the time, Bannon was the only alpha male in Trump's universe. And so Trump respected him and listen to his political views.
The voice of Joshua Green. Now, Joshua, what we see in your book is that Bannon recognizes in Trump, well, a less coherent view, version of his own view, and in a sense, as an empty vessel he could fill. But I didn't fully realize that he wasn't the only empty vessel that was available, because Bannon had considered, well, Cruz, Rand Paul, Ben Carson.
Well, Bannon had begun with Sarah Palin back in 2011, hitched his wagon to her, and then when she didn't run, he moved on to another Tea Party politician, Michelle Bachmann, whose name might not be familiar.
Oh, no, we all vividly remember.
Okay. Well, she briefly led the Republican polls back in 2012, but that didn't pan out. He moved on to a television presenter out here, Lou Dobbs, who now works for Fox News. That didn't work out, and he eventually landed on Trump. And it would be more accurate to say that Trump landed on Bannon, because I talked to Bannon in the book, and Bannon admits full well that when he first met Trump, he didn't take Trump seriously. And there's a scene in the book where Bannon does some cursory opposition research on Trump to tell him what he's going to run into if he runs for president. And as I'm sure your readers know, your viewers know, this is public records. I could call this information up on my phone. But Trump was absolutely dazzled that Bannon knew who he donated to and whether or not he'd voted. So part of this, I think, was driven by Trump's ignorance. But he just thought of Bannon as being this rogue-like figure who could help get him elected, and sure enough, Bannon did.
Where did Bannon's apocalyptic belief in the war between the Judeo-Christian world and Islam come from?
Well, I submit in the book that it is rooted in his deeply traditional Catholic upbringing. His parents were Tridentine Catholics attending the Latin Mass, deeply traditionalist. Bannon went to a right-wing Catholic military high school, and I interviewed some of his classmates who said, look, we were steeped in the belief that Christendom is constantly under assault from the forces of Islam, and that you can go back to the 1500s with Ferdinand and Isabel in Spain defending the onslaught of the Moors. So Bannon was brought up to believe that he was involved in an apocalyptic struggle. I think that notion was deepened and amplified by his experience in the Navy. He was part of the failed American effort to rescue the Iranian hostages in 1980. And then, of course, on September 11th, that seemed to be the radicalizing moment for Bannon, when he began to move from the entertainment industry in Hollywood into this hard right, what he calls America First nationalist politics.
You know, Christopher Hitchens was my very first guest on the very first program 30 years ago, and Christopher's view on the world of Islam doesn't depart that much. Now, good Catholic, well, a bad Catholic in the sense that he opts for this particular form of Catholicism that our own Mel Gibson also professes, but hasn't made him too popular with the incumbent Pope.
No, and in fact, Bannon is virulently hostile to the incumbent Pope. And before Bannon joined Trump's campaign, he was the executive editor of Breitbart News, a hard right populist website here in the States, and helped to expand Breitbart around the globe to London, where it was involved in Brexit. But Bannon also set up a Breitbart Rome and hired a conservative ex-priest because he wanted to prop up traditionalist forces who were opposed to Pope Francis. He called, in my book, he tells me he thinks Pope Francis is a liberal theology Jesuit and a pro-Islam globalist. So Bannon, definitely not a friend of the Pope. And interestingly enough, over the last week or so, a couple of Francis's allies have written an article attacking Bannon personally for what they call his apocalyptic geopolitics, and I think that's an accurate description of Bannon.
Let's stay in Italy for a minute, because one of the influences on Bannon that I didn't understand involves the quasi-fascist philosopher Julius Evola, who was, as you tell us, was an influence on Mussolini.
Well, on Mussolini and Hitler, yeah, one of the interesting lines of research in the book is that I went to Bannon, who is mentioned in various settings, that, you know, he has made clear that he's familiar with Evola and with some of the philosophers and intellectuals in the 30s and 40s that were involved not only with Mussolini but with Adolf Hitler in Germany. And I asked Ben, and I said, you know, if you claim that you're not a white supremacist and an anti-Semite, how is it that you're so familiar with all the thinkers and writers that helped drive those movements? And he said, well, I'm a nationalist, and when I went looking for an intellectual underpinning for my beliefs, the most important nationalist thinkers were people like Evola. And Bannon, as I say in the book, traces this back to his personal guru. Bannon's is an early 20th century French metaphysician named René Guénon, who was an occultist and a Freemason, but who believed in the transcendent unity of ancient religions, believed that God spoke to mankind in the earliest ages of the world, but that transcendent knowledge was lost with the rise of the Enlightenment. So when people say that Trump and Bannon want to take us back to an earlier age, you know, here in the States, they usually imply that they're trying to take us back to the 1940s and 1950s before civil rights. What Bannon wants to do is take the country all the way back to the 1500s. And that really is a scary thought.
Well, let's add another religion to the mix, because I learned from you that he adheres to an aspect of Hindu philosophy that emphasizes the dark goddess Kali.
Yes, well, so Guénon, Bannon's guru, developed what is known as primordial traditionalism, and that is the belief that all of the ancient religions, the Hindu Vedanta, paganism, Sufi Islam, all have this common root that has been lost over time. So Bannon is a big reader of the Hindu Vedanta, and Bannon, like Evola, like Guénon, believes that the world is currently in the midst of a 6,000-year-long dark age called the Kali Yuga. This is drawn from the Hindu Vedanta, and that if mankind doesn't fight back and return to an earlier time, re-embrace tradition and make its way back to God, that all will be lost. And so this is one reason why Bannon has such an apocalyptic worldview, and I think a lot of people
of
here
that,
don't understand that.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt, but does any of this nutty stuff surface in Breitbart?
Well, it surfaces in Breitbart, but where it's really surfaced is in Trump's early foreign policy moves. One reason that Bannon is so hostile to the European Union, to multilateral trade organizations, is that he believes that the rise of the modern nation state is eliminating our connection to God and is handing over our sovereignty and our identities to these secular bureaucrats in Brussels. And so as soon as Trump is elected, you see that the very first foreign leader he brings into Trump Tower, you know, is not a prime minister or president. It's Nigel Farage, who was one of the leaders of the Brexit campaign. So Bannon has been in the White House these last 6 months encouraging Trump to blow up multilateral agreements, foster this isolationist foreign policy, and keep out foreigners, which is why he did not want to accept 1,200 immigrants from Australia.
We all get that. We can all see the manifestations of this seething hotbed of religious fanaticism. I was just wondering whether he ever actually mentioned these philosophical connections, or does he keep those pretty close to his chest?
You know, he was perfectly willing to talk about them with me, which I found odd. I cannot imagine for a moment that Steve Bannon is talking to Donald Trump about late 19th century French metaphysics. So I think that Bannon keeps this to himself inside the White House. And I think what appeals to Trump about Bannon's politics is just a visceral understanding that an us versus them populism that demonizes immigrants, that demonizes secular liberals, is a good way of firing up the Republican base. And even as Trump has flailed during his first 6 months as president, there are still a good 35% to 38% of Americans who think he's doing a wonderful job. These are the people that Steve Bannon connects with. These are the people that are moved by this kind of nationalist populism. I think the scary thought for Trump and Bannon is that eventually these people abandon him. And if that were to happen, I'm not sure what Trump would do.
LNL on RN, the voice of Joshua Green, author of Devil's Bargain, Steve Bannon, Donald Trump, and the Storming of the Presidency. Listen on air, online, or on your ABC radio app. Bannon is often absolutely lucid, and I like the point that you stress that he understood that the mainstream media, the conservative media within the mainstream, if you like Fox, was losing its power, and that the way to get his ideas accepted was to infiltrate the sort of liberal press like the New York Times.
This is what drew me to Bannon originally. I wrote a big profile of him in 2015, and at the time, Bannon was masterminding a book called Clinton Cash that came out on the eve of Hillary Clinton's presidential announcement, and it documented all the financial ties between Clinton and her husband and a series of shady foreign autocrats and investors who had given money to her foundation. And that book unexpectedly became a New York Times bestseller, and it tarnished Clinton's image in a way that she never recovered from. And
hence Crooked Hillary.
Hence Crooked Hillary. But Bannon's insight was that it wasn't enough to start these wild rumors about Clinton that appealed to conservatives, because conservatives were already going to vote against her. What Bannon did with the book was to find documentable evidence, real facts that he could publish that investigative reporters at places like the New York Times and the Washington Post could then pick up and investigate further on their own. And Bannon thought that if this were to happen, it would disseminate these negative storylines about Clinton into the mainstream media and disillusion people who otherwise might have been inclined to vote for Clinton. And that is exactly what happened.
Before I abandon Breitbart entirely, I did hear a month or so ago that there was some blowback and that Breitbart was being forced to sound slightly less insane because it was losing advertising support.
Well, after Trump was elected and Bannon was made the chief strategist, the first target of the left in the United States was Steve Bannon, because they thought, here is a man who is so unpleasant and so unfit for the job and so offensive to so many people that we think that if we start a fight over Bannon, that we can tear him down and thereby wound Trump. They weren't able to pry Bannon out of the White House, but what they did do was to go after the advertisers on Breitbart News, many of whom dropped out. That had an effect on Breitbart's bottom line, but it hasn't really weakened the publication because it is underwritten by a family of far right-wing hedge funders called the Mercer family, and I do a chapter about them in the book. But they help prop up Breitbart News and a lot of the other conservative organizations that Bannon masterminded or organized. So they are still very much a factor in our politics. And if you look at the big fights in the White House this week, the one that's getting most of the press is between Steve Bannon and H.R. McMaster, Trump's national security director, who is being viciously attacked on Breitbart News and on social media because of his fight with Bannon. So I think that shows that Breitbart is still a factor in our politics, despite the fact that many of their advertisers were scared off.
Trump himself seemed to be scared off. There were so many stories about President Bannon that for a while we were told that the marriage of convenience was off.
It sure looked like it. If you go back to late February, there was a now famous Time magazine cover that showed Bannon's face looking very menacing and evil above the headline, "The Great Manipulator." And Trump's favorite magazine is Time magazine, and that cover enraged him because he felt that Bannon, who was a staffer, was getting more attention than he was. And so he banished Steve Bannon to kind of the outer orbit of his circle, and there were a lot of people in the White House, led by the president's son-in-law, Jared Kushner, who were trying to get Bannon fired. Bannon was put in the doghouse, but he has managed to claw his way back into the inner circle, mainly because Trump has become so embroiled in this Russia scandal, and Bannon appears to be one of the few advisors in his inner circle who hasn't become entangled in the Russia scandal and is therefore free to give him unfettered advice.
Joshua, you correctly describe his approach to power as shock and awe, burn it all down. Would you be kind enough to explain to me, because I've never understood this, what sort of America Bannon envisages or wants? Is there a plan?
I think there is. I mean, Bannon, if he had the power, would shut America's borders. He would deport everyone here illegally. He would, as you saw from the president this week, he would limit legal immigration as well, and he would focus government resources on people who are already American citizens. I think he would return to something representing a church state. Bannon is a big believer in traditional culture, and he's against political correctness. So I do think that he'd like to bring the country back to something more along the lines of a religious state, maybe the way the country was in the 1800s or 1900s. And he would also pursue a much less hawkish foreign policy than you've seen from either Republican presidents or Democratic presidents over the last 30, 40, 50 years.
Joshua, what position did he have on Iraq, for example?
Well, Bannon was against the Iraq war, and he is against the ongoing U.S. campaigns in Afghanistan. He is on the isolationist side of the White House debate about whether America should be more aggressive in Syria. So he is very much an isolationist.
How does that sit, though, with the apocalyptic vision of the War of Civilizations?
Well, he thinks that America ought to be defending itself at home. And this is one reason why so much of his focus has been on America's borders, on building a wall. He does not think that America should be pushing to democratize countries by force overseas. He thinks that we ought to start by beginning with our own country and expelling what he would consider, you know, invaders from Central America and Mexico and Muslim countries. Bannon was the brains behind this seven-country travel ban. So his focus is very much at home in a defensive one rather than an offensive one, as you saw from a Republican president like, say, George W. Bush.
Joshua, thank you very, very much. Joshua Green, journalist with Bloomberg and author of Devil's Bargain, Steve Bannon, Donald Trump, and The Storming of the Presidency, and it's out now from Penguin Random House.